You're listening to another fine cast from Sideways Suckers.
So what we need to know is who you are.
My name is Joe Ingram. I'm the CFO at Independent Fabrication.
And what's the CFO?
Chief Financial Officer / designer /
you're the top
guy man. Who visits shops / stuff. I do the business side of things.
I'm just flowing while I went wild.
Right, thanks. I'm trying to record an interview with Joe.
Sorry.
Oh, shut up. And what does Independent Fabrication actually do?
We make custom high-end bicycle frames out of steel, titanium and now carbon fibre.
And do you like tomatoes?
Yes, love them.
Excellent.
The bigger the better.
So what's hot for IF at the moment then?
Number one selling frames are now Steel Deluxe, which is our mountain bike, and Thai Crown Jewel, which is our road bike. Sales are about 55% road to mountain at this point, and about 55% Thai to steel. So, and then coming down the pipe is a new Reynolds 953, which I'm going to go to Reynolds today to check out.
And what's good about 953?
It's stronger than 6.4 titanium. It doesn't rust. It has great ride quality like an 853 steel frame and something else, which I'm forgetting. And it's light. It's about as light as a tie frame. So price point should be in probably slightly less than Thai frame.
Right.
So how we're going to sell Thai, I don't really know.
But it's going to be suitable for all kinds of use. It's not just going to be a road bike only.
But it's going to start out as a road bike because of dropouts, and then we'll get dropouts made for mountain. Hopefully, in short amount of time, things are coming together a lot faster than we thought they were going to.
What are the dropouts made of?
953.
Right, so the entire thing, does it have to be 953? Can you make it to any other material?
It's welded with a stainless steel weld wire.
Right.
And the bikes that we have so far have stainless steel seat stays. Stainless steel is very heavy and not nearly as strong. But Reynolds is now made 953 stays. Road stays that come in three different diameters, which is good for customizing ride quality. And then Paragon is working with Reynolds to get us head tube stock, bottom brackets, and road dropouts to start with. So we've got road and track, so you can get a single speed.
Yeah.
And then mountain should be in short order.
Interesting stuff. Will you paint it?
We can.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would at this point. I mean, it's
shiny
really
frames,
shiny and pretty.
Shiny frames look horrible.
But yeah, we can paint it.
Can you shop paint it?
Probably. Don't really know why you would. I mean, it would probably. I mean, it'll do what it does to a tie frame, but this is, it's a lot stronger than a 3.25 tie frame.
Right.
And
that's currently the tubing that you use on.
On a tie, yeah. And 6.4 is stronger titanium, and this is stronger than 6.4 tie, given, similar wall
strength
thicknesses and two different.
Well, I suppose it's not strength for weight, is it? But strength for the profile of an actual tube. Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. So what's going to happen with carbon?
XS is doing well this year. We'll stick with that. As far as anything else from that, probably not much. We're not going to go with a full carbon frame at any point ever. That's why we're so excited about the 953 stuff. Steel is kind of the base of our company, so we really like ride quality is most important for us, and we don't like the ride quality of a full carbon bike, so we won't be doing that. And there has been talk of making the XS into a mountain bike, but I don't know if that's going to come off. There would just not a whole lot of point to it.
So that would be a tie lugged?
tie lug carbon tubed. Probably not a carbon down tube. But I just made a tie mountain bike, and I was going to do that as a first prototype, and then we just decided against it. So if I haven't done it, then I don't think anybody, you know, I don't think we're going to do it for at least a few years. Never say never, but, you know.
Yeah.
Not anytime soon, anyway.
So, and just for, can you give us a brief history of
Independent?
Yeah.
Independent was founded in 1995. By a number of people who were looking for a job because Fat City Cycles closed down. Fat City went out of business and was sold off to Serata, which didn't last more than a couple of months, and then was dissolved. So Lloyd, who is still working with us, and he's the last remaining member, stubborn as he is, decided to hack it out with a few other people and see if they could make another company work. Struggled for a number of years, and we've kind of lost everybody from the old days except for Lloyd. So yeah, and then we started doing steel. We did steel until, I think, 2001 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's when Matt came on, Matt Bracken, who's the current president, came from Merlin, and Tyler and Keith both came over from Merlin, who are our two tie welders. We started doing tie then. So, although tie's pretty new to us, it's kind of old hat for the people
who
know it.
Yeah.
So we do a great tie product. And then, tie really started to take off. The company really started doing well in the end of 2002. And now, 2005 was gangbuster year for us.
So you're just rolling along on a high at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, knock on wood, everything kind of, if we have the rest of our lives the same as 2005, no complaints. I mean, press-wise, it's just been absolutely incredible.
Good.
Good times.
Am I right in thinking that everything that you make in-house?
Well, not everything. Shop painting's done about 20 minutes away by Metal Improvement. Who is a professional shop peening facility, that's what they do. Our rear ends for our tungsten electrodes are made in California. Yeah, in Disneyland. We won't go into the tungsten electrode.
Okay.
No, I mean we can. It's up.
Bye, good to see you.
That frame is the bane of my existence. It's a fantastic riding bike. It is the only thing we don't make fully in-house, and as a result of that, in hindsight being 2020, we should have figured out a way to make aluminum rear ends in-house and just done it. But we didn't, because we thought that somebody else was going to be able to make a better product at a shorter amount of time. So we outsourced it, and it's been a disaster.
There was an interesting comment that I saw made by Paul Turner about fabricating bikes in the US. And the gist of the story was that people wanted to know why you build bikes in Taiwan now rather than in the US. And his comment was that to make bikes in the US, you have to be good at shipping. You've just got to be a good logistics coordinator. Because nobody can actually do everything. You can't get a frame made by the same people that will heat treat it, and the same people that will paint it, and the same people that will finish it, to make a whole unit.
You can do most of it. I mean, we do. We don't heat treat our frames. All the tubing is heat treated.
Frames,
right. The only frame that we'll need to get heat treated in its entirety will be the 953 frame.
Right.
That we have figured out that it is better to heat treat the frame as a whole as opposed to heat treating the tubes and welding them up, because it becomes so strong that it will just kill all of our tooling. Everything we do is in-house. It's, we design the bike, we tack it, weld it, finish it, paint it, and ship it. I mean, if you want to make a lot of money, then don't make your own bikes. I mean, it's not you know, it doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, you can make an obscene amount of money by becoming a paper company,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you can employ 5 people to take care of East Coast, West Coast sales and European whatever sales, and then an accountant and somebody to kind of run the show, and that's it. If you want to make your own stuff, then yeah, you're not in it for the money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I like to make money. I'm the only kind of money-oriented person that I think everybody would like some money, but my background is money, so. But I wouldn't be doing this if, you know, I could be making a lot more money doing a number of other different things. But I wouldn't be having nearly as much fun. And in 3 years that I've been working at, if I have not woken up once in the morning and gone, I don't want to go to work today. So that's, you know, if the time comes that I need to make an obscene amount of money in order for me to kind of look myself in the, you know, in the mirror, then I'll go do something else. But mm-hmm. until that time comes, which I hope, you know, never will.
You're happy where you are.
I am, very happy. And when things are going well, you know, it makes things a lot easier. We've had a great year. And I think we make a damn good bike, so.
Long may it continue.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no sign of bad things to come, I don't think. And, I don't know, I mean, people are saying, you know, recession and blah, 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 and people aren't wanting to spend money. I think our end of it, us being 7, Serato, Moots, If, you know, a couple of others, you're kind of sheltered by that just because you're kind of, the bikes cost so much money that the people who...
It only appeals to a certain segment.
Yeah. And I like the fact that our customer base is very, very varied in that we have, you know, it's almost 50-50 mountain to road.
Mm-hmm.
And our client base is typically young, a lot of whom have a lot of money, but the majority of whom do not and have just saved up for
saved
a long
up
time.
For the thing that they want.
Yeah. And I think we have a good amount of personality. Customer service, I'd like to think, is... It's pretty good. I'll get back to you on email if you send me an email immediately. Stuff like that.
Yeah,
so.
That's always been certainly the way I found dealing with you anyway.
Hopefully easy to work with. We'll stop sending your bikes UPS, but aside from that...
Yes, please. I would like you to use a different carrier.
Yeah.
I saw once, I can't remember where it was, but there was an article where a guy had visited, because you're in the same vicinity as 7.
Yeah, very close, a couple of miles away.
There was a guy that had visited both factories, and his final comment was that you both make excellent bikes, which is obviously without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
He was greeted at 7 with a factory tour around their pristine offices, wearing a lab coat and some eyewear.
This is Velo News.
And he was greeted at IF with a glass of beer.
Yeah, that's pretty standard.
Which to me certainly made me think, I know which people I prefer to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it depends on how you approach your business. So 7 makes a fantastic product, but they've chosen their demographic to be, you know, slightly more conservative. I mean, they make is tie frames, the majority of which are road bikes. The customer base that comes along with that typically is, you know, slightly older, slightly more reserved, and mm-hmm. a slightly, you know, good amount more money. We're an employee-owned company. We're not here to make a large amount of money, you know, which means that probably, you know, I mean, the company will never grow to its full potential as far as profit margin is concerned and stuff like that. But I think we're all pretty comfortable with that. We enjoy a beer every now and then. Up until last year, we, you know, it was 4:00, you could get a beer, and now we've had to get our stuff together and pushed it back to 5, so before you can grab a beer. No drinking on the job. Hobo Heaven is where everybody hangs out and has a beer after work.
So Hobo Heaven, which is something that most people may have seen, stickers and t-shirts and things like that mentioned in it, but most people won't actually know what Hobo Heaven is.
Hobo Heaven is...
Give us a brief description.
Yeah, it's a... If you go into or out of the factory, you've got to go around these stairs that kind of go up to the gym that used to be above our factory. Not a big factory, kind of in a, you know, factory-esque little neighborhood. And underneath the stairs is this place that is called Hobo Heaven. It's kind of sheltered. There's a picnic table, and it's where everybody just kind of either has lunch or grabs a drink or just hangs out. It's called Hobo Heaven because during the summer we have at least two hobos. Just that's where they spend a lot of their time.
And have you ever thought about employing these guys?
We do actually. We employ them from time to time to kind of clean things up. If they, you know, they'll say, "Can I do something for $10?" So, yeah, sure. Pick up the garbage and
fantastic.
Maybe mow the lawn or something.
You have a lawn?
Well, we have a strip of grass.
And
we actually have flowers.
Ah,
It's pretty. And then they collect all of our empties and take them down and refund them for money. So, yeah, they've been very nice.
Spend it on furthering their education.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Family values and things like that. It's good.
Talking of flowers, loosely related to a couple of frames that I've seen in terms of paint jobs. All your paint is applied in-house.
Mm-hmm.
And basically you'll pretty much paint anything.
We will do anything that we can do. Yeah, Jill and Spencer are our two painters. Jill is really talented in figuring out ways to paint things onto frames. Some people do get sticker shock sometimes when they realize that their dream of having their, you know, tattoo painted onto a bike is actually pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a lot cheaper than what we charge if it's done in a much cheaper manner. We do a lot of sanding. If anything's painted in on our bikes, when you run your hand across it, you're not feeling any transition lines. We're a fully certified PPG in-house paint department, so we can color match pretty much any PPG color. PPG is what nearly all car manufacturers use to paint their cars. The difficulty comes in painting things onto tiny
small tubes. Don't make a good
it's not the same as painting a gas tank on a motorcycle and stuff like that. So you know, a lot of the paint jobs are really labor intensive. Everything we do is fully custom inclusive as far as fit, ride quality, all that kind of stuff, you know, rack mounts, brazons, all that kind of stuff. The one area you're going to see the price of the bike go up, and in some instances go up very, very quickly, is with paint. You know, and that's just to do with the amount of time it can take to paint the bike, or the actual cost of the paint. You know, Harlequin paints are several hundred dollars an ounce. I mean, it's just some paints are really, really expensive.
I imagine that the vast majority of the cost of a paint job is purely down to the human
time,
the skill, and the hours that it takes
some
to prepare
paint jobs
it,
take, you know, 8-12 hours just on a, you know, and then you look at it and it's a nice paint job, but
it doesn't look like 12 hours worth
of
work.
A simple panel paint job would retail for $250. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just panels painted on, and that adds probably about 5 hours to the paint time, just because it's, you know, masking and sanding and clearing and resanding and, you know, and it's just it takes a lot longer. So, gotta charge for it.
You can't work for free.
No.
Close, but. Free. So do all, as an employee owned company, does everybody have a say in what happens at IF? Does everybody
there's 13 of us, 11 of us have shares in the company. It is an employee owned company. We like to say that it's not employee run, although sometimes there is, you know, situations where there's just too many cooks in the kitchen and everybody wants a say. Big decisions like, I don't know, moving the company or, you know, things like that, yeah, everybody's going to have input. As far as, like, day-to-day activities, we like to trust everybody to do their job. I'd like to think that I'm trusted to handle, you know, the business side of things, and Matt's trusted to handle, you know, the sales and the majority of the designs, and I certainly trust our welders and finishers to do, you know, I wouldn't want to climb all those saying, you're not doing this right. So it's employee owned, in the sense that, you know, the money that we make, has a direct reflection on how much the money the company makes has direct reflection on how much we make.
Yeah.
So
if the company's doing well, each individual does well.
Does
if the
better.
Company's doing
yeah.
badly, then each individual takes
typically
a dive.
Yeah. You know, and people have, we've been getting our average hourly wage up in the last couple of years just because we've been doing so well. So yeah, I mean, it's, we have Monday morning meetings every week. We have a good amount of shareholder meetings, and then there's board meetings as well. You know, I mean, from that side of things, it's a typically run incorporated company, but the
like know, a proper business.
Yeah, but the Monday morning meetings are a chance for everybody to kind of, you know, get a feel for what's going on that week and how we're doing, and if anybody's got any complaints or issues regarding anything to do with, you know, work or other individuals and stuff like that, that's a good chance to hash it all out. I think we're all pretty open with each other, and it is, it's like a, you know, it's like a little, well, it's like a big family.
Does everybody get along with everybody else?
Yeah, yeah.
There's
very well.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, you know, everybody's got their spats every now and then, but I don't think there's anybody that is really disliked or anything like that. I think we all, a good amount of us, hang out with each other a lot and really enjoy each other's company.
So you don't just turn up to work, see each
no.
other at work, and then go home.
It's not a job, you know. I mean, it's not treated well. You know, it's not seen as just a 9-to-5, something that you do in order to get paid.
It's actually part of everybody's life.
Yeah, I mean, if Tyler could be making a lot more money welding other things than bicycles,
mm-hmm.
especially for us. But you know, I think it's the feeling that we're making a really good quality product that we're really proud to sell. I wouldn't want to, you know, sell something I'm not proud of. And it's the feeling that everything that you do has a direct, you know, leads directly to the success or failure of the company.
Yeah.
So everybody's got, you know, it plays an integral part in how well the company does, which is my reason for being there. It's, you know, it's really nice to know that I'm not a cog in a huge machine,
yeah.
you know, as a lot of my friends are in the financial world.
It's just going to tick along whether you're there
sit
or not.
Sit in a cubicle and
yeah.
just kind of,
yeah.
you know, you don't see the results of what, you know, what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It must be really frustrating. Yeah,
yeah,
and mind-numbing, yeah.
So things are good at IF and the future's looking rosy.
It's looking well. Yeah, and I mean, we're looking to, I think we're growing, whether we want to or not,
mm-hmm.
and so that's our main challenge right now is figuring how to manage
that,
our growth.
Yeah.
We don't ever want to be huge because we feel that would lead to we would lose some of the, you know, personability
yeah.
and just kind of
yeah.
the friendly, sociable aspect of the company. We hope not, but. You know, we're really going to try hard to keep that. And if there comes a point where, you know, there is signs of that disappearing, then we'll figure something out to make it, you know, if we have to just knock lead times out, then that's the way it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And right now that's what's happening. You know, lead times are at about 8 weeks and have been sitting at 8 weeks for a long time.
For quite some time, yeah.
Yeah, and they used to be, you know, this time 2 years ago, it was 3-to-4-week turnarounds.
Yeah.
We haven't seen any sign of slowing down. We've done a lot of things to streamline production. So while keeping the same 12, 13 people, we've been able to knock out a lot more frames just by kind of reorganizing
yeah.
and stuff like that. And that's made a hell of a difference. But, you know, there's probably going to come a time in the next 2 years that we're just going to be limited spatially. And, we're not at max capacity right now, but we're damn close.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, we've been talking to the mayor of Somerville and the mayor of Boston and trying to figure out if we can maybe move to a different place in the Boston area. And, you know, that would be cool, get a good deal on it. But cost of living in Boston is obscene.
Yeah, that's something else that I've seen commented on a few times, is that IF could make bikes way cheaper if they weren't in Boston.
I don't know if we could make the bikes way cheaper. I mean, it wouldn't be way cheaper. We could probably make them a little bit cheaper. I mean, we get a great deal on the space that we're in, and I think that's because we've been there for such a long time, and the area around it is coming up. But when we moved in there, it was a pretty shitty area. So, and our landlord likes us, which is nice. We don't own, and that is something that I think we like to do. You know, get a place of our own. And yeah, I mean, we could, you know, make the same amount of money. I think it would mean more to us as an ownership standpoint, as opposed to, you know, from a customer standpoint. I don't think the bikes would cost that much less. You know, you may be saving $10-$15 once, you know, I mean, if you're paying, you know, $5,000 a month on rent, yeah. But you're, you know, the way it breaks down, you're not going to save a tremendous amount on each piece.
No.
But if I'm making the same amount that I'm making now, but we're in an area where I don't have to pay, you know, $1,800 a month on rent just to live, then yeah, I mean, that's the goal of the company, is to make a great product and have everybody who's working there have a good lifestyle.
Good standards of living,
you know, nobody wants to be a millionaire. Well, I wouldn't mind being a millionaire, yeah. But you know, realistically, that's not going to happen. If I can make a good living doing what I'm doing, I got no complaints. I'm happy doing this for a very long time.
Brilliant.
Yeah. It's fun.
So there's no plans to move production to Taiwan?
No.
No plans to outsource frames to get somebody else to do the work and just put IF stickers on there?
Nope. Never going to happen.
That's what we want to hear.
Yeah. It will never happen. The company will not be the company it is if it does.
The thing that we find with the kind of products that you make at the end of the day are luxury goods for people who not necessarily can afford it, but who can justify it.
Yeah.
And that the difference in price between two seemingly similar objects, like if it's bike frames, for instance, you take a frame that's made in Taiwan with kind of a $50 manufacturing cost that retails for $150 or something along those lines, it's a bike frame. You can hang wheels from it, you can jump on it, you can go ride.
Mm-hmm.
It'll do everything that a bike needs to do. Nobody needs a bike better than that. But for the people that can justify a bike better than that, for them to pick a brand or choose a brand for whatever reason it is, where the sum of the parts, the bike is made with attention to detail at every aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of that seems disproportionate compared to what you can actually get the thing made for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you start paying for craftsmanship and care that goes into a bike, you don't end up with a product that's so much better than an off the peg.
Yeah, I think that's
churned fair. Out of a factory product.
Sure, there are some great bikes coming out of Taiwan. You know, I mean, you want to talk about? I mean, big companies. You know, make a great bike. You know, Specialized takes a lot of beating. You know, they make a fantastic bike. There's nothing wrong with going with a big company. And, you know, by people saying, you know, I mean, I like to think our bikes are better, but they're not. I mean, for the price difference, I don't know if they're, you know, it's you're paying for maybe something a little bit different. You know, I mean, custom is certainly a valuable aspect of it, and some people really do need a custom frame.
Yeah.
The majority of people do not. You got to keep in mind that it's not just custom fit, it's custom ride as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that may change things, you know, as far as, you know, what kind of rider you are, whether you spin or whether you mash, and how heavy you are and how you like your bike to feel. We can adjust that as well. Aesthetics are also a big part in it. But yeah, I mean, you know, the reason our bikes are so expensive is because they cost us a lot to make. The reason they cost us a lot to make is because of the quality, attention to detail, and, you know, the materials that we have to buy and the amount of time it takes to make and design each frame. It's, you know, we're not sitting here making obscene amounts of money off every bike.
I think there's a perception that with a high-quality product that somebody somewhere is making a fortune out of it.
It's not us.
It's certainly...
Yeah.
Knowing the things that I know about the way that the bike industry worked, it's I would say the exact opposite is true.
Mm-hmm.
The lower the quality of the product... The and
when
this company,
when we started, it was trying to, you know, we were trying to do that. I say we, this is before I came on, but, you know, there was, with a number of people that used to work at IF, the idea that, you know, they wanted to make bikes by the people, for the people kind of thing. And while that's, you know, all nice and you know, makes you feel all good inside and stuff like that, and that the company was really suffering as a result. And you're not making.
It's just not sustainable.
You're losing a lot of money on every single frame, and I mean that's no way to run a business. You know, you gotta find you gotta make a profit, or you're not going to be around, and the people who own and work at the company have to be able to eke out some sort of living. But yeah, I mean, you can come to my house, you can go to anybody's house, and we're certainly not millionaires, that's for sure. But happy.
That's the key thing.
Yeah, it is. So, like your little shop.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
I mean, we're in the same kind of situation. Right. We've been here doing this for 15 years, and we could have expanded the business. We could have opened another shop. We could have taken on more people. But what would be the point?
Right. No, there's a reason.
We're quite happy where we are. We're quite happy with what we do, and we're quite happy with the people that we deal with.
And there's a reason that people deal with you. I mean, you're not in the most ideal location, and you're not a huge shop that, you know, will just sell the hell out of some frames. You know, I mean, you do a very good number. But the argument, you know, has been made, well, why didn't we go with, you know, a huge shop in London or something like that? I wouldn't trade, you know, working with you guys, with, you know, dropping this and going to somebody else. It's such a pleasure to work with shops. And even if, you know, the other thing is that it's kind of scary to think if we did go with a huge company, if they were selling, you know, hundreds of frames a year, we couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah.
So, and then the quality would suffer. So you got to find a happy balance, and we are very picky with the shops that we do choose to work with. We definitely want to have a good working relationship, be on a first name basis with everybody. It makes it worthwhile.
That's good to know. That'll do, I reckon.
Well, one bike that we should probably mention is the new one that you're not telling anybody about, or trying not to tell anybody about. The breadstick.
The beat stick.
What's the? Because they're not size specific, are they? They're not built, they're not custom.
No, there's differing in top tube length, I think, three different top tube lengths. The idea behind the beat stick was it was come up by Brian Kelly, who's a tacker, and helped along by Jason Williams, who's a shipper. That's what they like to do, that's the kind of riding they like to do. We didn't make a bike like that. Brian, you know, as an employee owner, was able to kind of throw something together a few years ago, and it's been a process of perfection since then. People have since asked him where he can get one of these bikes, and we've said we're not making it, we don't do a dirt jumper bike, that's not what we do. And then we kind of said, well, why not? You know, we're not going to sell many of these bikes at all. And it's been a serious... It's the one bike that we are not making a lot of money on at all, because it costs us more to make than a steel mountain bike. We're charging less because we know that, you know, the market... I mean, for the price you can get a beat stick, you can get a fully built, you know, nice bike.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like, well, is it worth it to even make the bike at all if we're not making any money on it? But, yeah, we're not going to sell any of these things, really. It's more of just a... something else that we do, and it's, you know, made us some friends in different areas of the business that we really like. Eric at Deity is a really great guy, and working with little companies like that make, you know, products that we're not altogether familiar with.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting process. So, it's a great bike. It rides really well, and it does what you want it to do. But yeah, it's not fully custom.
Yeah.
It's just the only way that we could kind of do it, at least make it a little bit easier to manufacture.
Yeah, yeah.
So, cool.
Say goodbye to everybody, Joe.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye, Joe.
Yeah.
You can go back to Boston now.
Great. Drop me an email if you have any questions.
You can get in touch with Joe by emailing joe.ingram, that's ingram, at ifbikes.com. And you can check out the IF website.
Music Maestro. You're stranded.